Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
Good morning again. You know, I was thinking about the Unity's mission statement, that there is a power within you that's far greater than anything that exists outside of you. You guys know where that came from? Actually came from my college syllabus that when I started 38 years ago at the college, I put that into the syllabus that I gave to all the kids. But I don't know where I got that from. I don't know if I made it up or at this point it's mine because, you know, 38 years later. But I was just thinking about that when I heard that this morning, that there is a power within you that's far greater than anything that exists outside of you. And classes start in 2 weeks. And that's the thing I tell those kids in the first day of the class. And they all just look at me with a glazed over look, right? The second thing I tell them is that by the end of this semester, you will be aware of every thought that goes through your mind, every word that comes out of your mouth, and every deed that you perform. Again, they get a more glazed over look. But the thing is, the fact that I said that to them, you know, once you've heard it, you can't unhear it. You know, it's like once you've seen God, you cannot unsee God. So it's sort of, you know, introducing consciousness to experiences that it has never had before. That's sort of the process, right? So if you're just joining us, this is our sixth lesson on the unity way of living. And, the purpose of it is for us to really understand what is this unity process. You know, you'll hear that we are metaphysical Christians, which means that we approach the Bible metaphysically. We do not take it literally. And again, for those who haven't heard me say this, when I took courses at Loyola College working on a master's in pastoral counseling, we were dealing with Bible scholars. Now, Loyola is a Jesuit college, and the Jesuits are the keepers of the knowledge of Catholicism. I tell you, one of the folks at the college is a Jesuit. And I said to him, you know, that I understand you guys are the keepers of the knowledge of Catholicism. And he said, well, yes, we have to go through a lot more study than the typical priest does, you know. But the idea when we were there, that, you know, the instructor said to us, it says, no Bible scholar takes the Bible literally. It's, you know, it's a metaphysical document. The other thing you have to remember, and you've heard me say this before, is that the Old Testament is all based on Jewish culture, Jewish mysticism, you know, Jewish ideas. And so as Episcopal Bishop John Shelby Spong said, you cannot become a good Christian until you first become a good Jew. You have to understand the Jewish way of thinking. You know, so even Paul, even though in this, the New Testament, which a lot of us written by him, is that, you know, he was converting to Christianity through that point, but he was still a Jew. So he still had a Jewish consciousness and a Jewish mindset. So it's sort of understanding that idea that, you know, just taking the Bible literally doesn't give you a full impact of what it's trying to do. Also, as metaphysical Christians, we begin to understand, as I'll talk about in this talk, that our life is also to be looked at metaphysically. Not what is actually happening, but what am I to learn from what is actually happening? What does this really mean? And as we talked about last week, we are also what you call practical Christians, which means we have to practice that which we are learning. Okay, so you hear it and you keep playing with it in your mind and begin practicing, and eventually it becomes who you are. Is that making sense? Okay, so that's the idea behind the unity way of living. So the thought we're going to explore in this lesson is, who is in control of your mind, you or your mind? Okay. Now, of course, you know, the immediate source of confusion is our belief that we are our mind, so we must be in control of our mind. Okay, that's sort of the thought. Well, yeah, this is me. So, yeah, I'm in control of what I'm thinking. Okay. Our proof being that the nature of our personality is grounded in our worldly roles. So a lot of our thinking is based around the, if you heard me say this before, the mini, M-I-N-I, M-A-N-Y, many M-I-N-I, I-identities. We have several I-identities. You know, we show up as, I'm showing up now as a minister. You know, as soon as I'm out of here, I go back to just being Butch, right? You know, I'm a photographer, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather, I'm a great-grandfather. You know, we have all these identities that we operate from, and our mind has different personas that mix those different identities we have. So our thinking a lot of times is based around the roles that we play as opposed to the essence of who we really are, and that's what we're going to try to get to in this lesson. So who we think we are is the great illusion we have yet to overcome if we truly want to embark on the spiritual path. I can't embark on the spiritual path hiding behind the persona or the mask that I wear. Remember, persona is a Greek word which means, per means mask, and sana through which I make a sound. And we keep, and that comes from the old Greek days of Greek plays when they would put the mask in front of them, the actors on stage, and act from that mask. Well, we do the same thing now. Depending on where I am, I will whip out another mask to fit that role, okay? So as Elbert Hubbard says, man is not as he thinks he is, but what he thinks he is. Want me to say that again? All right, so man is not what he thinks he is, but what he thinks he is, okay? In other words, we have become a culmination of the thoughts we habitually process. Whatever I'm thinking about all the time is who I have become, all right? For example, even though I may claim to be disciplined and healthy and wise and loving and honest and dependable and gentle and kind, because I think I am, close examination of my thoughts, words, deeds, and actions may show something totally different. That's why Dr. Carl Jung says, if you really want to understand a person, listen carefully over time to all the things they say and do, and you'll begin to understand what's in their unconscious realm of mind. Okay? So in other words, who we are, who are we when the shades are pulled and there's nobody to perform for? You know, you've heard me say it before in self-concept psychology, the self, I mean, the real self, the other self, the ideal self, and the ideal other. The real self is who we really are when it's just us, just me by myself. Or I'm never by myself, I'm always with Pamela, so you mean with Pamela, right? So, you know, what's the real self? What is the other self, how other people see you? What is the ideal self, the self that the real is striving to become? And what is the ideal other, meaning this may be how you see me, but the ideal other is how I'm striving to change how you see me. You get that? So that's the process we're always going through. So the key this is getting at is, what is the real self? As my favorite instructor in Unity Village, Ed Rabel, would say, you know, that self that holds these soul secrets that nobody knows but you. Okay? So that's the process we're getting to, trying to find out who that real self is. So, you know, there are other kinds of thoughts that we process, that we go through. If you think about man is not as he thinks he is, but as he thinks he is, this is basically saying that, you know, who am I really in the dark? Who am I really under this process? So this lesson is going to explore ego control versus spiritual control in terms of our thoughts, words, deeds, and actions. Ego control versus spiritual control. A lot of times, ego control is a reaction to what is happening in the environment. Spiritual control is when you take time to be still and know, say it with me, that I am God. Okay? So to allow the negatively challenging circumstances of your life to discourage you or take away your joy is not having spiritual control over your life. Our work, when we realize that we are out of spiritual control, is to go to work to bring our thinking back into alignment with the spiritual principles that we've been learning. So we are going to get out of control. It's going to happen, right? But it's to recognize that that's what happened, and now I need to go to work to bring myself back into alignment with spiritual control. I need to bring myself back into alignment with those principles that I've been learning. Okay, and that's really the difference between one who is a practical Christian practicing the idea, because life is going to throw us off balance. But if you're practicing, you're going to try to figure out, how do I get back on balance? Does that make sense? Okay. And yes, we can live the rest of our lives without doing the work to bring our thoughts under spiritual control. Okay? As many have demonstrated throughout history, our ego can take us to great levels of success. But we're not talking about what we can accomplish through our intellectual skill or ability or our superior strength or our courage. We're not talking about that. Okay? What we're talking about is that that underlies that process. So when I think I'm confident, the underlying aspect of that is a God idea. Get it? When I think I am strong and powerful, the underlying idea behind that is a God idea. When I think I'm creative, the underlying idea behind that is a God idea. That's what we always want to get to, is what is the God idea behind this thing I'm doing in the world that I'm so proud of? Okay? So this is a very challenging mental process, because this is not about how can I become greater. What it is about is how can I become a greater channel through which the love and wisdom and understanding and strength and compassion that God is can pass through. So you've always heard me say, this is not about being good. It's about becoming a channel through which the good can flow. Because if I think I am being good, it's based on my perception of what good is. But when I become an open channel through which the good can flow, it's a whole nother idea. Is that? Okay, yes, exactly. All right. So the line of study is about how can I let go and let God be God in my life and affairs? How can I let go and let God be God in my life and affairs? As opposed to thinking I'm letting go and let God be God according to how I want God to be in my life and affairs. See, that's how it ends up a lot of times. Ego said, okay, I'll play this game. I'll let God be God as long as God will do it this way. Yeah, as long as I get my way. Exactly. You know, sort of like, you know, not thy way, but my way be done. Okay. But we want to understand what Jesus said, and he was clear. He says, no, not my will. Because he had said, Father, take this cup from me. Now, take this cup from me means take this situation that I'm dealing with, this thing I'm struggling with, take it from me. And he says, no, not my will, but thine be done. All right? I'm open and receptive to be an instrument through which the good can flow into this thing that I'm struggling with. And quite often when catastrophe or troubling circumstances hit, even when we appear to be in control, very often our inner emotions are out of control. And this is one of those difficult subjects, because on a human level, if I am out of control, if I'm demonstrating some strife that I'm going through, and I'm talking to other people, they're going, oh, yeah, that's horrible. You need to struggle with that. You know what I'm saying? So the key here is there's a whole other dynamic that I have to get my mind into. And the purpose of our investigation in this lesson is to discover another way of being. That way of being is, even in my emotional reaction to life's challenges, I remain open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth. Even while I am feeling myself moving emotionally into this challenge, I am conscious enough to remain open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth. Our work is to get to a place in consciousness where no matter what is occurring in our life or our body or our affairs or our thoughts or whatever, I am open and receptive, say it with me, to God's living spirit of truth, revealing itself in this situation. You get it? Right? So that's what I'm open to, is God revealing God's self. God revealing God's self is the thing that's going to guide me through this situation. So, yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death. It doesn't say, yea, though I camp out in the valley of the shadow of death. And that's what we typically do. We camp out in whatever situation we're going through. It says, no. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. You know, I shall fear no evil. Why? Because thou art with me. So is that, you understand the dynamics of that? Okay. So living in this world is a lifelong experience of being in a spiritual boot camp. Actually, mystics say that this is the boot camp of the universe. You know, so when souls are evolving, they're saying, okay, we'll go. And they say, okay, well, now it's time for you to go to boot camp. Oh, Earth, okay, right? And Kryon, Everybody, who knows who Kryon is? Kryon, who's a spirit that channels through Lee Carroll, says that souls actually stand on line waiting for their turn to come into the earth experience. Because this is where you really have the opportunity to evolve to a higher level of consciousness. Okay, so life is a series of metaphorical case studies. You hear I'm back in my school mind already. Complete with exercises and exams you must successfully complete. But fortunately, unlike being in school, you are allowed to do this exercise over and over again and take the exam over and over again until you finally get it. Okay? Life will just keep giving it to you. You fail it this time, no problem. We'll give it to you again. We'll give it to you again. It'll just keep doing it until you finally get it. Okay? And it's interesting. It's not that life is giving it to you. It's that your soul is calling it back. Your soul is saying, wait. I didn't get it that time. I'm calling it back. Your personality is going, oh, heck no, I don't want to do that again. But your soul is going, no. We didn't quite get that. Let's do this again. Okay? So it's sort of like that. This idea is learning to listen to what your soul is saying as opposed to your personality. Okay? So, and just like school, you cannot move to the next level until you complete what's on this level. Okay? Well, it's the same thing with this life experience. You cannot move to the next level of consciousness until you complete what's on this level. And as you heard me say before, the movement in consciousness is not like this. It's that you're moving along like this, and all of a sudden you awaken and realize you're here. All right? So it's awakening takes you to the next level. You don't just slowly go to the next level. You wake up at the next level. And again, as I've said to you so many times before, this is not new to us. All through our lives, we've been waking up to the next level of consciousness. You get what I'm saying? We saw a video of our great-grandson, who's 4 months now, eating off of a spoon for the first time, you know, and it's like, you know, he's like this, sticking it in his head, you know, right? But, you know, eventually he'll get that. He'll be a what? At the next level of consciousness. You follow me? And so we have, in our lifetimes, if we think back, we can think about, you know, moving from adolescence to teenage to young adult, you know what I'm saying? We can think about how we have evolved to where we are now. So this is not a new process to us. It's just becoming conscious of the fact that this is how the process works, okay? So, you know, each challenge offers us the opportunity to be still and know that I am God, okay? In other words, in every situation, take a moment to be still and know that there are possibilities here that are beyond what I can presently comprehend, okay? Maybe even beyond what I have the intellect for, all right? That's why you always want to be open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth, because I don't care who you are, Einstein, there were still things that he didn't know. You follow me? I don't care who you are. There is greater possibilities out there when you're open to them. However, this is where it is important to understand that you have another mind, a divine mind, available to you that transcends your perceived mind. You have a mind that transcends your perceived mind. There is only one mind, and that is the mind of God, and we are connected to that one mind. So you become open and receptive to that divine mind. And we created our ego mind when we lost our awareness of our true mind that God is. You know, in other words, we forgot who we were. And many of the different spiritual entities out there in New Thought are talking about this idea that we need to wake up. Okay? Wake up and remember who we are. We forgot that we are the Christ, the living spirit. There is only one begotten, and that one begotten of God is the Christ, which Jesus came here to express, and that's who we are. All right? I am the Christ. Jesus said, I am the Christ. But he says, all that I claim for myself, you can claim also. All right? So the problem we're having is that I am the Christ, and the Christ is always trying to bring me to a higher level of thinking, but it has to work its way through the menagerie of thought that I have going on. That's why, again, this is my favorite example, when Joseph, wisdom, and Mary, love, came to the inn to give birth to the Christ, they opened the door and said, there is no room for you in the inn. They didn't say there's no room in the inn. They said there's no room for you in the inn. There's no room for wisdom and love. There's no room for this Christ idea because we are already filled with all our own thought people. So that inn is our consciousness filled with the thought people of our own ideas. Here comes the wisdom and love to produce a Christ idea in us, and it can't even get in. Our mind is actually saying, oh, sorry, there's no room for you. That's mind-blowing, isn't it? All right? So the key is I am open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth. Says I'm keeping that door open for God to come in and help me with whatever this situation is that I'm going through. And as truth students, we are now at the crossroads of a difficult choice and dilemma. Do we continue using our mind as we have been, sort of like firefighters dousing the fires of our lives, you know, one after another, you know, and we're dousing the fires in our lives. You say, well, I took care of that. It was a little challenging, but I took care of that. But what you don't realize is you took care of it with a divine idea watered down to where you are in consciousness. You just catch that? In other words, every idea you come up with is a divine idea that you watered down to fit in your consciousness because you couldn't handle it at the level at which it was given to you. Okay? And so, yes, we are working with these divine ideas, but we have to understand that unless we're truly open and receptive, we're watering those ideas down. So in this synoptic study of the Teachings of Unity book, it says, we begin to see that our thoughts in themselves are the offsprings of divine ideas, but if we sent them forth in their original purity, our lives would be the effect of a perfect cause. If we sent them forth in their original purity, meaning as pure as the idea came into you, you did not adulterate it. Thou shalt not commit adultery at a deeper level. Remember, there's seven levels to the meanings of all the things in the Bible. At a deeper level, thou shalt not commit adultery means do not adulterate divine ideas by watering them down with your own thinking. Okay? So our lives would be the effect of a perfect cause. Perfect cause is God. God is first cause, meaning that which is the origin from which everything originates. So this statement is explaining that if we could truly become open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth flowing through us, unadulterated by our perceptions, these pure ideas would have a perfect effect in our lives. And everyone here has received a pure idea. But a lot of times when you receive it in its pure form, you kind of go, whoa, let me add some water to that. Right? I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I can feel to do that. Okay? So the typical mode of the ego mind is to color God thought with its own perceptions. This is especially true when we are fearful, angry, or somehow emotionally hurting, or when we are prideful or boastful or full of ourselves. We color God thought with our perceptions of what we believe to be real or true. So even though there is God thought flowing into our mind, what projects out of our mind has been colored by our emotions and perceptions that what we believe that God really is, all right? Now, we can't take the thought as it is. We have to do something with it to bring it down to who we are. So the question for us to ponder is, how do I allow divine ideas that flow into my mind from God mind to be set forth in their original purity into the affairs of my life? How do I truly let go and let God with no aspect of my own dynamic being added to it? Okay. Now again, no, we're not going to walk out of here and do that. But the key is you've heard it. You know what? And I heard it more than you heard it. Why? Because I'm saying it. And I'm not saying it really to you. I'm saying it to me. Whenever I write these talks, it's got to cause me to shift. All right? Until I get it enough to be able to say it to you. And realizing that I do adulterate God thought. You know? How do I become open and receptive to allow that to flow through me clean and pure? You know, there's always the pure white light healing, comforting light of God shining into the darkness of our mind. Now, why do I say the darkness of our mind? It's because just like the moon, you know, the moon has no light of its own. It gets its light from the sun. Well, the same thing with our mind. Our mind has no light. It gets its light from God light. Okay? So as it says in Genesis 1:3, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth is human consciousness, was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And God said, let there be light, and there was light, and God saw that the light was good. Meaning that the light that's in our mind, we are purely reflecting God light. Okay? So God light is shining upon human consciousness. He declared it's good, so God light is always shining in our mind, but whether or not it shines through us and into our lives unadulterated is depending on whether or not we can allow it to do so. Okay? Now, I use this analogy 1,000 times, so I'm going to take it somewhere else from here. The idea of dropping the slides into a slide projector adulterates the light. Okay? So the slide projector, remember, projects a pure white light. We drop the slide into the slide projector, and then this pure white light becomes adulterated. And what it projects out is not the pure white light, but the image of the slide. And that's what our minds do. Okay? Now, yes, it is true that we enjoy many of the things that we project into our lives, right? You know, there's lots of stuff going on in our lives right now that we projected out. We took that pure God light and we shaped it into what our lives look like. You know, and that's a good thing. Okay? It is that, but the key here is a lot of times the stuff we projected out that's good, remember last week's talk? The certainty of fear, all right? In other words, there's this certainty of fear that the stuff that I am enjoying, something may happen. There's always in the back of our mind some of this certainty of fear that, boy, this is good, but how long is it going to last? Okay? So in photography, in modern digital photography, there's this idea of taking two digital images and sandwiching one on top of the other. All right, and the one that's on top, you can take a digital brush and paint away some of it and reveal some of the image below it. Like when we were on that Parks trip, I did a group shot of 27 of us one time and the whole 40 another time. But then when I looked at them closely, I would shoot 10 shots at a time because I know when you shoot in group shots, somebody's eyes are closed. So I would just pop, 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 pop. And normally people don't move their heads. So when I go back later, the ones where their eyes are closed, I put the ones where their eyes are open on top, and I paint the head in. So now their eyes look open, right? But we saw some magnificent artwork where artists had photographed bison, which is the real name for buffalo. I don't know if you know that. Had photographed bison, sandwiched it over a landscape, and then painted out some of the bison's body so the landscape would come through. It was just breathtaking, okay? Well, the key here that for us is that there is always the light of God, the love of God, the peace of God, the joy of God, the healing presence of God. That is always an underlying layer in our consciousness. We overlay it with some level of fear. All right? The key is to get to a point where we now know that even though I am experiencing this fear of whatever it might be for you, that underlying that is the peace of God, the love of God, the presence of God, the joy of God. I've got to get to a place where I can take the digital brush in my mind and paint away some of the fear to allow that love to come through. And the brush that you use is silence, absolute stillness and silence. That's the brush that you use to paint away that fear. And remember, there's only two things in life, love and fear. That's all. That's all there is. Course in Miracles does a whole thing on that, okay? So whatever you are experiencing that is not of love is based on fear. But at least you can say to yourself, yes, I'm experiencing this fear. But underlying that fear is the activity of God. And if I can just become still and not allow my emotions to take over, I can let some of that God love come through. That, see, so there's got to be a practical application of this process. All right, you have to work with the process. This is the work. Gurdjieff and Uspensky, two of my famous writers, who their original writings are too dense to understand, Maurice Nicole interprets their works, but they talk about that this is the work, and not just here to, you know, for the joy of it. This is the work, as Gary Zukav, The Seat of the Soul, says that when we come down to this experience, we don't incarnate the entire soul. We make a decision that in this lifetime, I want to heal this part of my soul. Okay, so I will come into this experience with the idea that I'm going to do the work and call upon, my soul is going to call to me the activities that I need to work through to heal this part of my soul. All right, and so this is the work. And that's what we're here to do, is bring ourselves to this higher place in consciousness. So let me end with this thought from Susan Gale. All right, she says, it's important to realize that the majority of the baggage that weighs us down, we packed ourselves. Right, nobody gave it to us. We put it into the bag to carry along with us. And I'm going to end with this affirmation for that we can use this week. I release the heaviness in my mind and lighten the load of my life. Amen.